I'm J.R. Phillips. I'm the one that won't shut up, and yeah, you can't make me, okay?
And I'm Nico Harlequendon. I'm the one who took notes, lit them on fire, and then started a completely separate new project instead.
And welcome to BAM! Now you know everything!
Last night, I fell asleep to the sound of human screams and alien distortion, which can only mean one thing. I was watching The Fourth Kind. Thank you, Jess. And meanwhile, you were getting freaky watching, since the last episode, some weird Hellier stuff.
Yeah, and it got so in my head a little bit. I rewound and took a video of the documentary, making sure like my eyes weren't deceiving me. So my eyes were, in fact, deceiving me, or my brain was not remembering something, you know?
Yeah.
And when we dive deeper into it, I'll explain it. But I'm definitely hooked. So
I
need to know.
I can't wait to hear more about it. quick plugs. Jess, what are you working on?
All right. Well, you know, it's kind of like Groundhog's Day, I feel. I'm still working on Where Magic is Made. It's going great. I'm happy with where everything is. I also did my final edits for your next anthology.
I was going to say, that's new. Yeah.
Titled Leeches. And I'm actually really excited about it. And I hate that I can't give spoilers or anything until, what, like a year from now. But that's okay.
That's true. That's a long-ass wait.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been itching up that timeline.
I've been itching for To Be Frank since I finished the edits on that. And so
yeah.
I need to, that feeling.
Can't wait till it all comes together. Yeah, you have something quite creepy creeping its way for this next upcoming collection. I can't wait. Although you didn't fill out the form, which means that when it comes time to interview you again next year, there won't be any answers for that.
I'll refill it. I'll fill it. But I was so excited. I was like, let me just share the document with all the others.
Love it.
I did put my name and phone number redundant on the top for you. So
just in case I forget.
I did do that. But I will fill out the form eventually. I need your help to pull the trigger on just the KDP stuff. And for all those out there that aren't self-published authors or going down this hole of confusion and stuff, KDP is like Kindle, right? Or like Amazon.
Yep.
How you self
publishing?
Yeah, I knew the first part of that acronym. But so I'm going down that rabbit hole right now. But you know when you're about to turn in an assignment and you're like, it's done, but I want it to be perfect. And but a part of that is just like you needing to let go. Like every project could be different, could be not, I'm not going to say better, but I'm going to say like you might have another approach to it when you're older, even by a day older, you might have another idea for it.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to like stop it. And I met with an artist this weekend who happened to be a family friend. And, you know, we're going to be talking about synchronicities a lot, because that's yep. what Hellier is all about. But in my life, I've always noticed these things. And this artist, Sean, is very good at character art, and he's already developed his own card game.
Oh,
The Fissures of Barrenwood. I want to call it Barrenwood Fissures all the time, but it's the Fissures of Barrenwood. Anyway, whatever. But I'm thinking of this game. And then I meet this guy who's far into making his own games, very talented artist. We're talking the entire family party. And that's what makes it the best is that he's a family friend. So it's like another trusted person. And when the universe kind of sends you these trusted people, the ones that you kind of instantly connect with, I think that's the core of Hellier too. So it's very interesting.
Damn, Jess, you're picking it up awfully fast.
I think I'm susceptible. So
it's not picking it up. It's susceptible to virality. Yeah. Quick plug, Kickstarter marches forward. We were at 41% funded from last time. My phone's ringing. I'm just going to turn it down a little bit. Super excited. Black pages looking beautiful. I'll save it for the confessional, but there's something to talk about here with this special edition. It's quite flummoxing, and I think you'll get a kick out of this, hopefully. But yeah, Kickstarter is still going strong. Check it out. Links below. Appreciate all the people that have checked it out already. We're going to have some great updates soon.
That's almost 50%. That's the optimist in me. I know. Probably not rounding up, but I'm rounding up over here. That's crazy. So how much longer for the Kickstarter?
Until a couple days into August. So I think it's like the 4th or the 6th or something like that. So we're lagging a little bit behind, but there's usually a flourish at the end.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, I gotta get it.
Yeah, I need to do a better job of getting some stuff out. That's a great transition to the confessional. First confession for me is that I have not been posting on TikTok whatsoever about Volume 2, which we're still accepting things for, or about the special edition Kickstarter.
You say you haven't been posting about, and this is specific, but you haven't been posting, period. You've been reposting me a lot, which I appreciate. Yeah. That's nice. I mean, you know, that's a tag team effort. And then, of course, when you're reposting mine, I'm like reminded, okay, let me go on. Let me go see what you, and then I'm like, I've already done all the buttons for these videos. So I won't let me do any more buttons. But you were doing other ads and stuff that I haven't even touched yet when it comes to, like, Facebook and stuff like that. So you're doing it. You're doing it.
That's the other half of my confession that I thought you might get a kick out of. So the Facebook ad, the trolls have found my Facebook ads. And, oh, my God, it's so crazy. That's what, whenever I find the time, the next TikTok post will be about.
What could they possibly be trolling you about?
Oh, my God. We're talking little girl on the cover, and it's called Forbidden Fruit. This is pedo territory.
Oh, God.
Did Epstein write this? So, of course, I engage with them. I can't not, right?
Like, no, that's like a call. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. I'm not just going to let it just sit there. And so I'm just like chilling out after work or whatever, like responding to these things. And every single one of them are out of work folks who just have too much time on their hands. Some of them are in the publishing industry in some way, shape, or form themselves, even if it is creating AI book covers or something like this. So we really do tend to tell on ourselves, don't we?
Yeah. And also, it's like, if you're looking at that cover and you're thinking that immediate thought, maybe you need to go get your checks, go get yourself checked out, you know? I don't know. Like, because we're so programmed in society to sexualize everything.
I know.
Sometimes, you know, it's practice for you as like a human being to like sit back and be like, wait, is that a me thing or the, you know, like that kind of thing? And that's kind of what I always do now that I'm trying not to be so toxic. My confession is kind of funny, kind of dark, because I've talked into my Grammy yesterday, actually, and I had sent you a couple of TikToks I found of that AI MIT study, but yeah, like the reactions to it, right?
Yeah.
And then piggyback that off of all these coins and stuff everybody's talking about, like the infiltrating our economy and like the bill that just passed allowing it. And I'm sitting there and I'm like really trying to use my brain. Like it's steaming. Okay. I'm like, I don't understand because we're moving so rapidly, it feels, that I'm like, my confession is there's too much information twisting around a heart of an issue, like with the AI, because then you hear about the environmental impact too, which I don't know why I was sheltering myself from that whole thing too. But then I'm like looking at like 10,000 gallons of water for one generative piece. And I'm like, what is happening? And then this is my Grammy. Well, I'm 83, so I'm kind of done with this world. She just walks away.
Oh my God.
Well, she's 80, but she's like, I'm over this world or whatever. Because we're both sitting there like, what does this even mean? So my confession is I don't know what anything means, especially for my money.
Your money?
Yeah, because that's like the coins. They're talking about using coins instead of cash and like corporations or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I thought everybody was making fun of NFTs and Bitcoins. Remember when NFTs were a thing and we were all talking about it? And I don't remember. I don't know. I didn't even know then what those were.
Yeah.
Not that great. Will tried to explain it to me a million times. And I was like, I don't know. I'm trying.
They do still exist, and people are still huge fans of them for a variety of reasons. But
yeah.
So the movement toward like corporations and governments using things like this digital decentralized currency kind of reminds me of, do you remember back like turn of the century, late 1800s, early 1900s, mining towns? Whole towns for specific mining companies would crop up in the middle of rural nowhere, and people would flock to them for the opportunity of working in them. They'd build mining stores, company education, like schools and stuff like that. And they wouldn't pay in cash. They would pay in these credits or these tokens or these coins that were not fiat currency. Yeah. But they could only be used at the company store.
Yeah.
And so this is the same type of thing that it's, I feel like we're moving cyclically. It's all, time is a flat circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sold my soul to the company store.
That's right.
Yeah. My dad used to sing that song and I was like obsessed with it. And then now I'm like, have I been obsessed with it my whole life because I was just knowing this impending doom
prophecy
that was coming? Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, and I think maybe you did it on purpose, maybe you didn't, but Hellier is all about the mining towns, right?
Yes.
So it's also very Lovecraftian, right?
Yes.
You know, of, oh, here's this secret rural town that everybody's forgotten about, no one cares about, and they're all saying these things. But then when you go to try to talk to individuals in the town, what are you talking about? Nothing weird ever happens here. But then you hear that there's a lot of weird stuff from people. And that in and of itself is Twilight Zone and creepy. And that's what happens in Hellier a lot, is like they get all this information, all these testimonials, all these people interested in sharing their paranormal stories. And then they go to the town, and then there was like, no, nothing ever weird happens around here.
Real quick, before we back up and talk just a little bit about like how this concept is introduced in the show, in the series, like, think about it, though. If you live, you're born, you grow up in and amongst like the weird shit, would you know?
That's true. But I don't know if it's an instinctual thing, right? To be able to recognize when something maybe just doesn't quite belong, you know, a prey instinct, right? We love to say that we're predators and stuff, but we all have a signal that goes off when there's like a danger, right? Talked about all the time. So when something's like a little off, sometimes we'll just shove it down, right? We don't want to acknowledge that anything's off. So a part of me is like, do they want to welcome in this energy of offness, or are they just so great at barricading it off until they're attacking their homes or, you know, whatever it turns out to be in Hellier? Because at first it was goblins. And I just want to pause there. Did they have to call them goblins like on purpose? Because if you're going up to somebody and you're trying to get people to believe you about things, and you go up to somebody and you say, hey, did you see those goblins last night? No, I did not.
Good luck, buddy. Yeah.
And then the way that they describe them, I get it. Like, don't call them aliens. Don't call them goblins. I call them creatures. Call them critters. Call them something that makes people go, oh, yeah, I'll keep an eye out for those critters. Instead, when you say goblins, you get a look. Like, you know, you get a kind of thing. And like, oh, I'm never going to believe what this guy says. And I know, as somebody who loves paranormal stuff, okay, as somebody who is susceptible to believing in a lot of stuff, I am obviously more open to believing in a force like Pan than I am in a goblin. And that's just because of the terminology I think of. You know, you just think of a goblin, you think of fantasy. You don't think of, like, you know what I mean? Like, so that goblins, was my initial thought.
Yeah, I think goblin is definitely colloquial too. Like, I don't think that's something that we use. Like, you and I are from the East Coast. Pretty north too. You're kind of straddling the Kentucky area, but so I think there's a slight difference there, but I also think that there's another piece of it that, whether intended or not, plays a role. And I think it's kind of what you're describing. And there's an initiation into that weirdness, and like, who is open to listening about things that don't feel like they make sense? Who will ask more questions, or who will just shut it out completely? Like, is your brain turned off to anything that you don't understand?
Yeah, but I like to trick people, okay? I want to reel them in. Like, all of a sudden, now you're in the dark and spooky and paranormal, and everything just feels normal, like a frog in a kettle. You know,
you want to boil that fucking frog.
I heat it up. Yeah, because we've talked about this before, how we look versus our personalities, or, you know, whatever.
Full of contradictions.
Right. So when somebody comes, like, is talking to me, they probably think like, oh, basic, you know, I'm not trying to hurt my feelings here, but you know what I mean? Like, they're just not going to expect me to get really weird. Like, right away. And then eventually they're like, oh, she's not just obsessed with Lord of the Rings.
And Deftones.
She doesn't have these, like, hyper fixations. She's literally the devil. I'm just kidding.
I love it.
Oh, gosh. But I did have my rock collection.
Yeah, dude.
Because I know that I kept talking about, I'm just going to show you my little Lifesavers rock collection.
Yeah, I love that.
Because I talked about my rock collection on a live earlier this week, because somebody else was talking about how much they like rocks. And I was like, well, I was just talking about my rock collection. So I feel like I needed to bust it out a little bit.
Yeah, show your.
I'm going to show
bona fides.
my one tumble. Now, you can't see it, but
very magenta, almost purple wine. Cool.
It's funny because it's darker on the camera, but anyway, proof that I had a rock tumbler.
You aren't just stealing the valor of the nerds.
Okay. But it made me start thinking I need to like switch out my altar a little bit after watching Hellier, just like a little bit. Maybe take my amethyst off of there and let it kind of recharge a bit.
I love this. So yeah, what did you feel about Greg and Dana for the listeners? You know, we told them to watch episode one, but what were your vibes? Spoilers, light spoilers ahead for the beginning of Hellier. It's been out for a while. Go watch it.
I thought they were very genuine in their delivery of facts and things, certain things. It did have me questioning my own self of like, why am I so open to certain people's rituals and my own rituals? But when I'm watching somebody do it on a camera, I'm automatically like, I don't know about this. Okay.
Why does this feel so performative?
Right. And like, I know in a sense, all rituals are performative. You are literally, you're literally performing a ritual. She was very similar in my head to me, right? When I said, I believe in a lot of things, but there's some things I'm still pretty skeptical on, like aliens and Bigfoot. But I'm not skeptical on aliens. She is. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I am skeptical on Bigfoot, to be honest. I do like how it's going in the direction of something that I've already believed in, which is everything, quote unquote, supernatural is connected in a web of energy. And whether or not they go through that fully and show energy is the causation. I don't know where this is leading. I'm only on episode 4, but we've gone from goblins to Mothman to maybe something deeper that they're not quite sure of. I am getting a lot of foreshadowing to this cave. We haven't gotten to the cave yet. Something happens in this cave. But it really also made me want to go to these caves in general, but I also don't want to die and get lost down there. But anyway, you scream. I'm sorry that took me out. It was such a good fadeaway scream. Like, I don't know if you did that on purpose. It sounds like you're in the cave. but they were talking a lot. So I'll answer the question. I liked them, but I had some reservations of their motivation.
Uh-huh.
And I have to remember that as a writer, podcaster, all of our stuff, uh-huh, we in some ways are looking to entertain and perform and do stuff. And when you're doing a documentary, you have to, too. That might not take away from authenticity, but it does maybe add that phenomenon of mass hysteria or when you're feeding off of each other. Because let's talk about the wood scene when there's like they're whistling and then they're like, oh,
and well, like, first.
Oh, sorry.
First, for any of the listeners that haven't watched this, episode 1 starts with a weird email, right? From stranger. Like, Greg, Dana, their friends, whoever else is involved in this documentary throughout, it's like ebb and flow. They all have a history of paranormal research, maybe making films as kids or doing any type of like ghost hunting type of stuff and Bigfoot hunting.
Yeah.
So, cut to present, these guys are adults. They're doing still weird stuff, but like a nice different variety. But they get a weird email from this guy.
From David an account that they haven't checked since they were like, what, 13?
Yeah.
From this like
young,
13,
at least.
15? Yeah.
Yeah. And did you also catch who told David Christie to send that email?
The wrist.
Terry.
Wrist, which is an obvious pen name or alias.
And the review that you fucking randomly found to bring to last episode was written by fucking Terry, dude. Unreal.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about their word, which I thought was my favorite word. Their favorite word, synchronicity. I think it comes up like 15 billion times in one episode.
It will continue to, yeah.
And I understand because there's probably no better word to describe what they're talking about. Because we've talked about it just between you and I of our lives becoming that way. You know what I mean? And I've always believed in like deja vu and things like this that are signs from the pattern, right? The sacred geometry, that kind of thing of, hey, you've walked this path before and it's been successful, so continue to walk down it. There's something waiting to be unveiled to you. There's something waiting for you there. I've always believed in that. So to get an email that connects me to all of these other people that have similar interests that I've already kind of know, kind of trust in this industry, I would be just throwing synchronicity around too. Okay. Because it's just a layer on layer on layer of things you can't ignore.
Why is it happening? Yeah.
Yeah. Like there always has to be an answer to that why. And I do love all of the X-Files, like their entire, every room they go in is like, I want to believe what's out there. Like all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, I do love it. I love the whole vibe of it. Right now, I did take some notes, so I just want to make sure. Okay.
Yeah. And I love that you already touched upon it. But Dana, she calls herself not a pagan, but a hedge witch.
Mm-hmm.
She describes herself as skeptical and kind of skeptical around people and how people tell stories and what their motivations are. And it was exactly what you said unprompted last episode. It's very funny.
I know. And so that's why she also has a very familiar face to me. I don't know if it's just because similar features or you know, what it is to some people that I knew from the around there. You know, I don't know. Anyway, so she's comfortable to watch. But there are times, because maybe it's like a mirror, right, to me, that like I don't want to ever come off as like inauthentic, you know? So anyway, I thought her rituals, her ritual with the candles was very interesting and very real feeling. But when they're in the woods, this is the part it loses me.
All right, take us away. They're investigating this weirdness solicited by email from a stranger states away.
Right, that they can't find. And they end up doing this ritual outside of a cabin, which is 30 minutes or 20 minutes outside of Hellier, right? So they're in the woods and they're just trying to commune. And just because you think you're communing with whatever you believe doesn't mean you're communing with that entity. So if I am in the forest, right, I'm surrounded by trickster energy. That's just the way it is. So if you're going to light candles and invoke yourself, they kept saying, I am open, come on up, I am ready, you're invited. And I'm like, don't just be saying that in the middle of the woods.
I knew it would freak you out. I knew it would freak you out.
And when you're in the Appalachia and you're hear a whistle, the number one thing you do not do is whistle back. That is what they say. Just like how none of the people when they investigated and they heard like the crying from the cave, all of them are like, no, I didn't go in there because that's what you don't do that. You don't answer the call in the way. Now, of course, we all would be tempted to answer the call if you want to believe and you want to see and you want to go out there. So I don't hold that against them, but I was very nervous for them. Now, in all paranormal documentaries, I am with the skeptics whenever there's a branch cracking in the distance or they talk about hearing a whistle back and then I don't hear the whistle, but they did, but the microphones didn't pick it up or something. Because I rewatched. I like went back, was like, let me hear these damn whistles.
Rightly so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't hear any of the whistles. That if we, as we go further into it, they do end up using the spirit box mm-hmm. in the same scene, like kind of after in the same chapter. And I thought that was very interesting. Would I have liked them to prove how soundproof those headphones are? Yes. But having experience with drummers and yeah. knowing how powerful those headphones are, it took a lot of the skepticism out of me because I was like, first of all, Connor's a man with headphones on. And you know what I mean?
Catholic.
And Catholic. Catholic using a spirit box.
I know. I know.
That's cool and a little crazy from my world.
Yeah, love it.
But there's the way that the conversation went, it was very interesting. Now, the part that I got really spooked out on, it was during the spirit box, and he's like doing this conversation, and the camera work, right?
So good.
It's so good, and
Carl Pfeiffer is so good.
You have one guy who's in it, Carl, that is in the scene, and there's this other camera guy that you never really see. So I kind of forget that he's
hired
there.
Guy. Yeah.
Right? So the whole time I'm like, how are they getting this footage? I'm like, what's happening? Anyway, during the spirit box, all four of the main people are within the view. And then they're going back and forth between camera angles, like one from Connor's front while he's like zipping along the radio channels and one from his profile. Mm-hmm. It goes to the one facing him. And it's a really spooky part where it keeps saying, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? And they're like, yeah, come on up. Come on up. And I'm like, stop telling them. Now you're inviting them onto your porch. What? I don't understand.
The tension.
And I see a pair of feet stepping next to Connor. I forgot the existence of the cameraman. So I was like, oh, someone's about to come up and murder Connor. Like, I forgot I was watching a documentary. I thought I was watching a murder mystery all of a sudden, coming out cloaked in the night. But so I rewatched it. And then the skeptic in me is like, oh, that's the guy that's been making all the noises. Look at it. It's got feet. They forgot to edit the feet out. I got to send this to Nico.
This big doofus is clunking his feet around.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, this is what's happening. And then, of course, it turned out, obviously, they kept saying team of five. So my brain was playing tricks on me.
Yeah, so. That's okay. You were in it. I love that you were in it. I have ever been in it, too. I've watched it so many times. But yeah, that scene's so good. I thought you were only going to watch like one episode. But so I'm not quite sure where four ends. Do you remember like the last thing? Like, were they talking on the phone to a friend? Like, where does four end?
Okay, yeah. So I've seen the part where they're talking to Tyler, another
new guy.
Investigator. Which was also really interesting. I think he's going to be an interesting personality compared to the rest of them. Now, when I'm watching something, I like to see how people interact to each other and to new energy, right? And I think Tyler is a threatening energy to some of them, like not in a mean, evil way, but in a spotlight kind of way, or like a fear of them getting pushed aside by him. But he comes in and he has this story for synchronicity that isn't as, is this a word? Synchronous?
Synchronistic?
Synchronistic. Synchronite, whatever. I won't do it. It just wasn't as powerful of a story. It was like anticlimactic compared to all of the stuff that they had gone through and all of their smirks around the table. But then none of them filled Tyler in, like,
yeah,
you know, about anything. So I was like, maybe they don't want another entity a part of their things, which I would understand. Group project, you're already coordinating with five people, you're already doing everything, and Tyler's a lone wolf wearing a leather vest.
That's so cringe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm just like, you need a team if you're a paranormal investigator, you know?
True.
You know? Not to jump all over the place, but if you're been listening, you know this is my MO, is to kind of jump all over the place. But I want to talk about the tarot of it all.
Yeah, do. Please do.
So Greg was like taking the cards, like, let me shuffle these cards. And she, and I could see how I would be, and Dana was exactly how I was, like, you're touching my cards. Okay.
Get the fuck away.
Yeah. But the way he was describing it, he was like, even if you don't believe in the power of tarot, and then you're touching the cards, don't touch my cards and say skeptical things. And then also, you're shuffling all weird. You're bending my cards. What are you doing, Greg? You don't know what you're talking about. Let Dana do her thing. And then anyway, he's going into it.
Hands off, Greg.
And I literally was like, she has no idea what he's talking about. So maybe the person who is the, let Greg talk about the goblins and the aliens and Bigfoot, you know? Yeah. Let Dana talk about the mysticisms, the rituals, the things like that. Let her do it. So, and then they did the fishbowl. And I had just talked about it on the live and Substack about how my friend, when she first read it, did the fishbowl like concept. And I was like, oh my God, synchronicity. But then when they're discussing the tarot,
the devil
comes up like right away.
The devil.
And it's like, you got these three cards, and I never looked at the Five of Cups in a negative light. I mean, unless it's reversed, right? And I don't know if it was reversed. And so when she's going into it and her perspective of it and how she reads it, and like, it's a sad card. It's like one bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of proverb. I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow, there's so many ways. And she was already feeling so uncomfortable there. So it was a very interesting discussion they end up having. And I thought it ended in a fruitful way. It started in an annoying me kind of way, but it ended in a interesting, real discussion. And it had me thinking that so often we try to act a certain way, like to fit in. We're watching movies, TV shows, right, with scripts all the time. Mm-hmm. And now when we see something real, like a real conversation with tarot and a real conversation about crystals and a real conversation about rituals, and we're expecting to see zip zap boom, there's immediate repercussions, or there's immediate wind through it, like practical magic and stuff like that. It's like, that's not real, right? Because that is a script. So when we see a real conversation, it's so weird that my gut instinct is like disingenuous.
Yeah.
Isn't that like a weird, it's like a weird thing that I had to sort of sit with in my brain. Yeah. A little.
We are not comfortable with real things because so often those real things are very dim when compared to like the dopamine and the serotonin and the oxytocin of like manufactured, scientifically perfect media ready for consumption.
Yeah, it was like a crazy thing. But I did love Greg's line. So Greg, if you're ever listening to this, because this is all about Hellier, and the synchronicities, who knows? I appreciated his, I don't know if it was his quote or he was quoting something, but when it comes to tarot, what falls to the floor comes to your door. And I love that. And I'm like, I want that on a t-shirt. I think that would be, I love that concept. And also, I thought it was a cool band name, On the Floor or something. Anyway, I don't know why. Maybe because of mosh pits.
Love it.
But yeah, I'm definitely in it. I'm definitely ready. There wasn't anybody being dragged off
yet.
into with claws on the floor. But you watched The Fourth Kind and
Bro. Yes. Fourth Kind. So yes. Your memory was not failing you. Last episode, you were saying, Fourth Kind, there's this psychologist whose husband was murdered mysteriously, right? Or whatever.
There was something, she was...
Something weird. That was told off camera.
Mm-hmm.
But the psychologist has many sessions in a remote part of Alaska with a lot of people sharing similar symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And she's connecting these dots to her own situation. And some weird things follow. Now, Jess, since you've watched 4 full-ass episodes of Hellier, mm-hmm. I'm going to use this phrase. I don't know if they really talked about it in depth, but what is it called? Like a window or a viewing area mm-hmm. or something like that? That is kind of like what I felt this narrative for The Fourth Kind was kind of saying. So there's real footage
mm-hmm.
shared alongside of reenactments, which is great. Is it wrong that the real footage made me go, what the fuck do they expect us to believe or think?
I know. Well, that's the thing. It's like, yeah. I think the recordings are compelling. I think the lineup when it comes to that, I think visually, and I wanted to get into this, but we can go in depth into it later. But like okay. the Flatland theory, it's a math theory. A Flatland is how they describe the theory, and it was like a 30-40 minute movie discussing Flatland, but it kind of goes into what our eyes are capable of seeing. So I think even if you would record something and your eyes are your eyes, like you're not going to just see, you have an expectation of what it should look like. And if you don't see that expectation, I think
maybe there's mistrust.
Yeah, like your brain is like, let's just get rid of that. Like that's going to freak us out.
Okay. So I fell asleep during The Fourth Kind. I tried watching it, not last night, but the night before, first time. They're screaming all the way through it. For those of you who haven't watched this 2009 alien abduction movie, so you know Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that's where you meet face-to-face. Aliens, Fourth Kind is when you are abducted by them. Your ass is taken away into outer space. And so that is the thread that is being followed in this movie, I would say. Also, the psychologist, is her name Abigail? Abby? Played
remember.
By Mila Jovovich. She comes across some notes from her either disappeared or murdered husband. I forget which. Will, which I thought was very
I forgot.
Funny.
I forgot
his name is Will. And he's been studying some things secretly before he disappeared or was killed. And like his notes led Abigail, the psychologist, to this professor at a university who was studying Sumerian culture and language and like a bunch of other things, which is also right up Jess's alley. And he is able to help her translate some weird shit that's being picked up and otherwise made no sense of from these recordings from her sessions with her patients, right? Who are experiencing weird screen memories, like these memories covering what real abductions are happening, the real alien shit with the oily eyes and the lipless mouths. I think that's a hellier quote.
Yeah.
Describing those goblins. So the screen memory, I think, is really important to note, which is this owl, this very specific dark-eyed barn owl. And it makes everybody so uneasy, and I love it so much.
Yeah.
But with her hypnosis and a colleague, she's able to press through these screen memories, and levitation happens. People mysteriously die or are unhinged and kill their loved ones because they pressed too hard, and these memories are so horrific that they can't live with them. And yeah, legit. Fell asleep. Watched it again. I was like, how could I fall asleep with everyone screaming every 10 minutes on this movie?
Traumatized.
It just put me so at ease. Talk about time slippage, right? Because that's something that's very common to abductions and things
yeah.
like that.
I thought, so The Fourth Kind came out around the time of like Paranormal Activity and all of that. And then everybody was really into it, like Cloverfield, District 9, like the kind of documentary, fictionalized things that were happening. But The Fourth Kind kind of went a step further because it was based off of these real journals and these real experiences and things that they found. But of course, dramatized because it's a movie. But my sister is still petrified of owls after watching that movie. Like, she is uneasy with owls. And my sister is a very big sci-fi, aliens, space. Like, I like loving all of that stuff. So for her to get so freaked out, I just was not expecting it because it's usually not like that when it comes to aliens for
interesting.
Her.
Interesting.
So it was very interesting. But I just remember, and I think it's the audio in me, the audiophile in me. I don't know. Insidious did this to me too. The baby monitor versus her tape recorder in when it's in The Fourth Kind. You have the tape recorder going and it giving you information the whole time in The Fourth Kind, and it progressively gets louder, more unhinged, more like, you know, gargled. And in Insidious, the same thing happens with the baby monitor when she's like walking around the house and she's just hearing, I want it. And then it gets like progressively louder. And then I remember those are the parts of scary movies that linger with me. It's not the slasher of it all, right? It's not the murder of it all. It's not the dark figure in the corner of the room. Like, yeah, that's like, ooh, it's the whispers and the actual haunts of like, you're being watched, you're being observed.
Tension build.
Yeah, you're never alone is kind of like the vibe both of those movies give. And Hellier.
Well, in Hellier, they also talk about, I'm sure they got to it by this part already, but they've mentioned ultra-terrestrials, because you said they mentioned Mothman. So John Keel also wrote ultra-terrestrials. I think he coined it. Think about that. Should that hypothesis be true? We are never alone, because they're not somewhere else. They're in between our dimensions. They're beside our dimensions. They're in our dimensions and not, like you were saying, within our perception.
Yeah. So do you know about the Flatland? It was very popular discussion, I think, a long time ago, like 80s-ish.
Yeah, I don't think so, but I was immediately like intrigued by it because I'm constantly calling anywhere outside of New England flatland and like making fun of flatlanders.
And flat earthers, people that believe that this earth is flat and a disc and whatever.
Maybe, but flatland, that's what I associate flatland with. People who aren't maybe
used to altitude.
Maybe aren't up to the task of like managing in the mountains.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so flatland is like talking about one dimension versus the second dimension versus the third dimension versus the fourth dimension, fifth dimension, sixth dimension, so on, so forth.
So it's talking about the stack.
Right. So the way it's described, and they do it such a beautiful job, even for kids to understand, though it's a theory largely discussed in logic math classes at like college level. So... and logic math is the only math that I succeeded in because it was words and arguing, and I'm good at that. So I was like, I can definitely flourish here. So you have a straight line, right? So that's linear, one dimension. A straight line can only see flat things, right? Like it can only see on its one line. Boom, boom. So a two-dimensional object breaches its dimension, it sees it only as a series of lines because that's the only way it can truly understand what's going on. And the premise of this movie is the closer you are to a circle, the closer you are to divinity. The circles in this movie have higher status, right? It's a geometry movie. So, okay. You have to think of it in shapes. And you have this triangle and this square. And this triangle, of course, is nowhere close to a circle. And neither is a square, but a square is closer than a triangle in this world of politics shapes.
This horrible caste system to geometry, yeah.
And then his father, I think it's the father, starts explaining the dimensions, right, of like what you can see. So they... in Flatland, do not believe in the third dimension because when they're visited by anything from the third dimension, it looks like a circle because when it comes in, the edges all disappear. You only see the face of something. So this sphere has been visiting Flatlanders for centuries, whatever, I forget the whole lore of the thing. But because when he enters their domain, he just looks like a circle. So that's why they worship the circles, because they're like, well, this guy who knows a lot is a circle. But anyway, that sphere comes down, visits the triangles and the squares, and kind of takes him on this adventure of like, you do not comprehend what you don't know yourself. So when we're living in our dimension and we're visited by things we don't understand, they're coming into our space and we see them as ghosts, as Bigfoot, as Mothman, as creatures, critters, whatever. And that's the sentiment of the paranormal to me, because you can't see. Because just like that circle or sphere, you're going to simplify it in your mind.
But still be launched toward gnosis.
And yeah, still be, you know. And it's just, it was just like a great, I learned about it, I think when I was like 19, 20 in a college class, just sitting there. And immediately it became a religion for me. Like if somebody had to ask me what I believed in, we talked about transcendentalism, energy never dies, mm-hmm. transferring of energy, you go where back to the source, right? And also we don't know that source because we're Flatlanders. So, and then I'm like, I'll worship that. I'll worship Flatland.
So what type of something wears the faces of Bigfoot and goblins and all of that jazz?
Right. That's the question, right?
Yeah.
And also, why are they visiting our plane? Or are we here by accident? You know, there's all these answers and questions to whys, and we've asked them since we were children. Like, where do we come from? How did that happen? How did Adam and Eve have all those babies? I don't get it. You know, like, if you're any religious or anything, that's, we're all asking those questions all the time. And it's just funny. I just think it's funny that people don't respect the paranormal aspect enough. Like, you're going to pray to, you know, why can't I pray to what I want to pray to?
The goblins.
Like the flatland. Yeah.
The flatland. So goblins, you were saying, like, D&D-ish, fantasy-ish flavor. Yeah. Why is it so frustrating? Aliens and the Fae, you said trickster earlier. We were talking about tricksters. Djinn.
Yeah.
Other things like this. These are all conflated with the same sort of skepticism and, like, upholding as holy, right?
Right.
Nature as well. And I think you said it, like, went sideways when they went into the woods, right? Like, they're out there. They're in Kentucky. They're in an unknown place
where they don't feel comfortable. They haven't been welcomed warmly at this point. They've been getting the runaround. They call their one contact who's just like, oh, my grandson doesn't got no service around here. I'm really sorry. I'll try to get in touch with him. And it's just like, but so, yeah, that's when the uncomfortability started to seep from the screen into me. Because I was
the
like,
the woods is for sure a character itself.
Yeah. Always.
Whether it's like a god or not, which I think you're right, and I think it could feature that kind of like alien god-like vibe, but...
Yeah, because it's just... I am more ready to believe in gods and goddesses, obviously, than I am prepared to think that there's goblins. And maybe it's because I would just have a different name. That's what language is, right? Maybe I would just have a different name to describe it. And my tactics are different. But kudos to them for just going up to random people and being like, hey, there are about those goblins around here. I would never be able to go up to a stranger and be like, hey, you seen any goblins?
How do you ever expect to find them, Jess?
I'll call them. Okay, I'll find a way to them. If I'm invited in, I'm invited in. Don't eat me. Okay, that's the only thing. Don't eat me and just knock me out. Okay.
I think a lot of people feel and see the same thing that you're seeing too. Because, like, when you go back and watch it, I only rewatched the first episode, and Greg is saying things like, I didn't know what we were getting into. There was weirdness about the whole thing, right? Like, that's how the narrative opens up. He has, like, that conviction. He's believing in it, but he's not certain as to, like, what exactly happened. Because this is still playing out, just to give you kind of, like, a heads up, you and the listeners. And that vibe that Greg brings into it and frames it with is very, like, my favorite initiatory cult behavior.
Yeah.
And so this could be like mystery cults, not necessarily like, you know, the cults, true crime cults, but.
No, it's like a cult classic, you know?
Yeah. Sure. It has become a cult classic. But yeah, the mystery cults of like old.
No, but.
I don't want to like frame it too hardcore, but.
No, I can definitely see, and it's very familiar on how when I'm talking about something I believe in, but I don't want to seem like you're going to throw me in the loony bin and give me a lobotomy. I just want to gently go through it. But that's why it was so shocking of how loosely he is with the goblin term.
Because I love it.
But now with the timeline of things, and you see in the beginning, like now I understand where they're filming and when. And so I can kind of see, okay, now we're in the present-ish. Now we're in the past. And I love how they even said, because they couldn't find, they're looking for that guy, David's house.
Yep.
And they can't even find it. And in my head, I thought, you recorded. So can you go back and look?
Yeah.
And then even when I said that, he said, we didn't realize at the time, like, obviously we had a recording. But it didn't matter anyway, because everything probably looked the same to them. When you visit a town, you're not at home, okay? Yeah. You're visiting a town, everything looks green and full of muddy rivers and banks.
Maybe scary.
And also, everyone's telling you, it's not safe around here. Don't go into the, if someone's leading you down the woods path, don't follow them. And I'm like, but yet nothing weird happens here. That's weird. If you have to tell me, I can't talk to everybody because I'll die. That's weird.
I will say one thing to that. And moving here to Michigan, specifically where I live in Michigan, and first day we were here, we were at Taco Bell because we didn't have internet or anything, because the people who had like flipped the house walled over the old internet ports and what have you. Like, we didn't have anything. We had to have them come out and redo everything.
What the hell?
First guy we meet from here is working at Taco Bell. And he's, so we're like, hey, yeah, we just moved here. Like, what do you have for advice? Any words of advice? And he's like, don't mess with the wrong people. XYZ, and get a gun.
Oh.
And it's like that, dude. When you're an outsider and you're talking to people, it's not weird to them.
Yeah.
But they'll fucking tell you, and it sure is weird for you.
If somebody came here, like to where I live, right? And we're like, hey, can I have some advice? I'd be like, wear a sunblock. Don't go out between the hours of 10 and 2 or you'll look like a tomato. And, you know, that's it. Honestly, that's it. It wouldn't be like pack a piece, walk down the opposite side of the street.
You're living in some fancy pants area, I guess.
No, I think
I'm just. I love
yeah,
it.
I know. It'd be so funny. Actually, we have a gate. It's a gated community. Actually, every freaking neighborhood in Florida is a gated community. So.
Well, they're all newer, right? They're not like ancient neighborhoods like up here. Forgotten by time.
Yeah. Palm Beach is like up and coming. All right.
Yeah, pretty new. Last question for you. You kind of answered this already, but would you drive across country, across states for a spooky stranger's email?
If I had a group like that, yeah, I would. If somebody emailed me, now don't everybody email me all at freaking once, but if somebody emailed me and told me I should come, like, check out this space. But the thing is, if I'm going to talk about my powers so candidly, if
please,
I look at a setting, like a picture of a house or whatever, I will dream about that. If there's energy there. So like last night, I literally dreamt about the woods.
No.
So it's a little hard to remember what I dreamt because I slept so really weird and fitfully last night.
I wonder why.
I think a part of it may be hellier, like, you know, you're on the edge a little bit. Anything paranormal, you're like, and when you're a sensitive person, it's like extra prickly, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I think stress, too. So I'm so susceptible to stress. Putting the books together, preparing for all of our stuff we're doing, wanting to do a good job, quitting my job and my whole entire family wanting to have interviews with me about what my plans are, pretty much.
Oh, no,
you know what
dude.
I mean? So then I'm sleeping And I'm like, going into the woods. Yeah, I'll go into the woods. Give me some money. Give me some money. I'm there. But I think I tell Will all the time, I would love to go on like a haunted house, like legitimate house of horrors. Like I think you can go see like certain serial killer homes and things like that. I would love to just feel the difference, right, of natural anxiety that I have to like when I'm in somewhere. So that way it doesn't feel as bad when I'm having a petty panic attack. That's not really a panic attack, but it's what I call it because I can't breathe at night, specifically.
Yeah. I think it makes all the difference if who you're with, like you were saying.
Right.
And in the case of this show, if you think the message was meant for you.
Right.
Which I think they have a little bit of.
Yeah. It's kind of
chosen, kind of.
Yeah, like if this finds you, kind of thing. But I think all shows are like that. Yeah. All media is like that. Because you think about Black Mirror, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to assume, but you know why it's called Black Mirror.
Of course.
Okay.
All of these Black Mirrors in front of me.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's like the amount we're accidentally scrying all the time. Is something that I think more people need to be aware of the power that lies within. We're not just addicted to screens because of the shiny lights and the noises that come from it and the chemicals that are released. It's not,
they don't hurt, but
yeah, but kids especially are susceptible to it because of the thing of how open their minds are. And that's why screen time is important out there, okay? Screen time. Cut it
off. Manage it. Limit it. And think about what we're doing to ourselves.
I know. Because I had a headache the other day, right? I hadn't looked at a screen. Okay, I was like hanging out with my Grammy. I was just, you know, by the pool. I had a headache. Go and sit in front of my computer. Headache gone. I'm like, I cannot get addicted to my computer the way I'm addicted to caffeine. I, you know, but it's just kind of the way it is because we're so used to being in front of this great source of, you know, technology.
Thanks to Slam Lethal for the comment on Spotify. Not sure which of our dearest friends you are, but we appreciate the comment and that you listen on Spotify. So if you guys want to tell your alien abductee stories or anything else weird that flows in with this jazz as Jess wraps up Hellier and maybe even starts the Gateway tapes, because I did get her those.
Oh, I did.
Follow along. Yeah, oh. You listen?
Yeah, we'll go into that on another episode. I just listened.
What a cliffhanger.
I just listened to tape one and it was jarring how instantly relaxed I got. So
what about that tone at the beginning? Did it sound familiar or no? Gifted and Talented.
It definitely sounded familiar, but I don't know if the familiarity stemmed from maybe I've been introduced to this concept or soundbite prior or not. So I'm like kind of letting it. I think that after I get through the introductory tape of like the first 30 minutes, I'll let things nestle in. But I don't want to be like, I'm trying to not assume I know it. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Because sometimes you trick yourself, you know? So I'm just like, I definitely get a sense of familiarity, but I'm not for sure.
I can't wait. We'll swap stories about our first Gateway experience next time.
Ooh.
All right. Jess and I are filming early this week so we can do a little road trip to find goblins of our own. But you can catch us. This is going to drop Tuesday. We'll be back live on Substack next Friday. Check all our stuff out below. And thanks for joining. Bye.
Bye, everybody.